I think patience has been the biggest lesson I've learned. And I think it's something I reiterate on my YouTube channel all the time. I say, pack your patience, because say books move at the speed of books. There's like the speed of light, really fast, the speed of sound. And then there's the very slow speed of books.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we have
MK Williams.
Yes. Y'all, it's really great. She is so wise. And she's kind of young. I mean, she looks young, but she is super wise. I wrote that down while she was talking. And more than once, I'm like, that's so smart. That's so smart when she was talking about, you know, advice and just with things she wish she had known and lessons that she's learned. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, she writes across different genres and she's in the process of maybe possibly going trad. She started out indie. Like, she's taking one book, possibly trad. And so we talk about her choices around that and how she decided to do that. And and she works with a lot of new authors and aspiring authors. So we talk about, you know, common mistakes she sees and
really good.
And how she nurtures a community. Yeah. It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it was very good. So what's been going on with you?
Still writing. Writing those words.
Yep.
And I thought the other day, if anybody ever has any question about either of us, if we're using AI to generate books, all they had to do is listen to this podcast and they all know we are not.
No.
We're using it as a resource to help at times with certain things like word choice and phrasing.
It depends on how lazy I am.
So anyway, so still writing. Nothing's changed there. But I did want to share this. This is an email I got from a reader this week.
All right, she's ready.
Hello. I'm not sure if my answer is actually expected or the emails I'm receiving are simply generated by a non-human automatic system. Nevertheless, I'm a fan of your work and I'm enjoying sending this email. So I just thought that was hilarious in this day when people, I mean, my readers tend to be older.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even my readers are thinking, is this a real person?
Yeah.
And I replied and I said, yes, there is indeed a real person behind these emails. And he was delighted to hear from a real person. So
I just thought
that was funny. And I think I may change my email autoresponders to say something about, you know, I'm Sarah, I'm a real person. So I just thought that was funny. I'd share that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just what we're going to be dealing with in the future or now, I guess. But I have two things I want to ask you about.
Okay.
One is Dune. You went to see it, right?
I went to see it. Yeah.
It was good.
Bad. Gorgeous. It was gorgeous. I don't know that I've seen a more beautiful movie. I mean, like, just visually stunning movie. But, and I did love it. I did love it. But I'm not a fan. I mean, I'm not familiar with the books. I haven't read the books. Yeah. So I really wasn't knowing. I didn't know what to expect. I guess I thought it was going to wrap up the story, and it doesn't. Like, it does to a certain degree, but in my opinion, the ending was a cliffhanger. But I've seen people online going, no, that's just how the second book ends. But there is a third book, but I don't know when they're going to put out. I don't know when they're going to do the movie to the third. I mean, do a movie for the third book, but visually stunning. And as I've had time to think about it, because I saw it the Thursday before it came out on Friday. I mean, I can see that that's how the story went. It was me that was sort of projecting this HEA sort of thinking to the movie and the story. And the story is not really an HEA kind of.
No, it doesn't look like it. Just from the posters.
So anyway, visually just absolutely stunning. I mean, more than once, my breath was taken away from the things you saw, and I don't know how they did it. And the worms play very prominently in this movie, and I don't know how they did that. It's just amazing. So
Oh, well, that's cool. Well, I do have family members who have read, I think, the whole book series, and they're like, yeah, that's going to be an interesting movie.
Yeah, I did hear from somebody on TikTok that said that, you know, they had read the whole series and they're like, it gets pretty weird.
That's what I heard too.
One guy was like, he'd read the series and he was going through and he was like, they do this and they did this. Why? Don't worry about it. And more things off than not were like, don't worry about it. Like, there's not really an answer. So just go with it.
Just go with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of endings, I think we have to talk about Miss Scarlet and No Duke. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I'm heartbroken, but I could kind of see it coming because I couldn't really figure out. Well, I don't want to give anything away in case anybody has it, but I couldn't really figure out how they were going to resolve some things in the second season.
Yeah,
unless he was, you know, not going to come back. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So if you're not a fan of, it's PBS, right?
It's PBS.
It's the show. It's originally called Miss Scarlet and the Duke. And I watched the first season, I think, and I just got tired of like the bickering. So I really haven't tuned in since then, but like, I forgot what day it was, but I saw the post from PBS mm-hmm. about how the Duke was leaving mm-hmm. and all the comments were so negative. And I was like, so now it's just called Miss Scarlet, right?
Yeah. And it really was, I mean, they didn't really set it up to have something ongoing because it was just going to be the same all the time, you know, the bickering and the
him. They were never really going to get together, you thought? Or
no, I mean, there really wasn't a way for them to get together because just societally and because of what he does and what she does, just there wasn't. But anyway, it was, it's sad. But this, I've watched all of them and I love them. I love them. I love that series so much. Yeah.
So that's the problem with TV and with seasonal TV is that you kind of have to keep your characters treading water. You can't really let them change too much because if you do, it's not the same show that people like if they got together and the kind of sparky relationship stopped, you would not be happy, right?
No. And there really was no way for them to like be together. I mean, you know, marry or anything. I mean, it's in Victoria, America, you know, I mean, the women didn't work. She works. I mean, they work, but that was lower class and they're not lower class.
So she couldn't be an upper class lady. It would be very, very unusual.
Yeah. And he's the police chief or whatever, you know, I mean, he has a position. And so, you know.
Well, so that's one reason I wrote the series book is because you've got to, like, if you think ahead, if you're writing an episodic series, mm-hmm. and you don't want your characters to change that much, how are you going to propel it, you know, as long as you want to? Maybe you only want to write 3 books and then you're done.
Right.
But so that's
challenge. With your Olive books, you know, I mean, she and Jasper could potentially be together because he admires what she does.
Right.
And in this, I think he admires it. He can't support it kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And so, but I did think about that because I've had other series where I'm like, okay, we've reached a point, we're kind of done and I don't know how to keep it going. So I intentionally set it up so that it could keep going for as long as I want it to. Mm-hmm. So it's just something to think about especially if you're a serious author.
Right.
You know, like a mystery episodic.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to get to the point where your books are boring.
No.
But you don't want to be like, oh, I'm out of story now and we have to quit because that's just unsatisfying.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay. So I just had to get your thoughts on
that. Those are my thoughts.
Sorry.
For what they're worth.
What have you been doing this week?
I've been writing. So I actually started a romance 2 this week. Mm-hmm. I'm in a group. We meet once a month. It's like it started as a brainstorming group, still is, but it's kind of a mastermind. We talk about everything. But a couple of them in there were like, what can we do? Like, what can we do to help you get the words on the page? And not just for a romance book, but for, you know, anyway. So because I was saying, you know, if I was giving advice, what I'm doing now is not really the advice I would give, but I am getting words on the page. And so, you know, it's good. But there is this third book in this series that really I want to finish. I would like that series just to be wrapped up and done. Mm-hmm. So, and I had an idea for a first scene. Mm-hmm. And so they have been meeting with me to write. We do sprints at 8 o'clock in the morning for like 40 minutes. And then we do sprints at 1:30 in the afternoon for about 40 minutes. And so that's just been this week. And it has been, it's been really helpful and really great. And then we sat down and plotted out the rest of that, you know, book as far as the, you know, the things I need to hit and stuff. And, and I'm going to keep working on the other thing I was working on too, that wasn't a traditional romance. It was something a little different. And I'm not going to give up on that because I love it, but I really want to finish this series and get this book out. People are waiting for it. And it's really for my readers because they're the ones that have been waiting for it. So anyway, that's what I want
to, you don't want to disappoint people. Like there's always that sometimes you have like the next book that would wrap everything up or make you feel complete with it.
Right.
And I can see that.
And if I do decide at some point to go in a different direction besides traditional romance books or rom-com, then I will know that I have finished this thing and didn't leave something hanging. But so there is a little bit of, I feel like I have to finish it, but more it's, I want to, I just want to be, I want to tell this story. I've always wanted to tell this story. So, and you know, the fact is, because I haven't written in a while, it's baby steps. I mean, I'm taking baby steps and they're faltering and they're not great. But I'm moving in the right direction. And so,
You're, what is the phrase that people, you're in the arena? You're in there working.
Yeah. I'm getting my butt kicked in the arena. Yes. Yes. That's me right now. Getting my butt kicked, but I'm still in there. That's, so
yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do.
You know, it's not easy. It's not like, let's sit down and just whip this book out.
No, it's not. And so, you know, I don't know. I have no release date for anything and I'm not probably setting any kind of deadline, though I might, because I might need to, you know, just to make sure I have
to motivate you
a little bit of motivation. But gosh, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know if my editors could. I mean, it's been so long. They probably have completely forgotten about me.
No,
but
they have not forgotten you.
It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I'm also working on new covers for, well, this month we're starting new covers for the Bride's books. And I'm super excited about that. And I have to decide. I've got some decisions to make about that. What I'm going to do with them. But I'll have time because, you know, it's going to take a while to do four covers, but so there's things going on and I'm happy about it.
I also wanted to mention that, if you're looking for a cover designer, ebooklaunchcovers.com is who I use for one of my series covers. And so they do a great job with illustration and, I guess like the photo covers, if you're using photos.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in looking for a cover designer, you could go to ebooklaunch.com and that's an affiliate link and just kind of browse what they have. I really enjoy working with them because they have like a system where you request things and then they email you and say, we got your request and here's the timeline. Mm. So it's really nice.
Yeah, and, that's great.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, if it's a single person shop, you email and you don't know if they got your email for a while.
Right.
And so I like working with them because they do great covers and their system is really good.
That's awesome.
Keeping in touch.
That's awesome. So the link will be in the show notes.
Yeah. All right.
Very good. All right. I'm also still doing consulting. So if anybody's interested, let me know. And you get a discount if you are a podcast listener. Yeah. But we should get on to, Sarah's got one more thing.
We have supporters.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, yes. Y'all, forgive me. I'm so sorry. I got like ahead of myself. But yes, we do have supporters.
Yes, we have two new supporters. Mm-hmm. So thanks to Shannon Grogan, who mm-hmm. she used the little tent emoji.
And there's got to be a story behind that.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm.
And we have Mo Parisian, and she, they, if I'm not sure, have a little fire next emoji. To theirs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we will just say our most heartfelt thanks for them supporting us. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can go to wishidknownthenforwriters.com/support. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. Very good.
I never did it right. Yeah, but we should get on with the interview because MK's got a lot of great things to say.
Yes. So here is MK. Well, today we're really excited to talk to MK Williams. Hi, MK. How are you?
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're glad you're here. We'll let Sarah read your bio and then we'll get started.
Yeah. After self-publishing two novels, MK Williams found herself spending more and more time answering questions from aspiring authors than working on her next manuscript. Out of necessity, Author Your Ambition was born. Through a series of videos, books, and courses, MK now helps more authors than she could have imagined, and she even has time to write her own books as well. Since 2015, she has written and published her own collection of books and helped dozens of authors on their independent publishing journey.
Love that. Love that. Well, tell us how you got into writing first.
I've always loved to read. Mm-hmm. And my mom was a huge fan of Stephen King and always taught me, you know, to respect books. Always had me reading. You know, I was one of the kids in elementary school who would do the summer reading to get my free pizza at the end of the summer. So I loved to read. I loved the idea of becoming a writer because I loved books so much. And so in high school, I wrote the angsty, horrible poetry that nobody should read that. But in college, I was lucky enough to take an elective course called Writing Killer Fiction. Mm-hmm. And it was, the assignment was to finish a short story by the end of the semester that was supposed to be more of like a mystery thriller. But the teacher was like, write the story you want to write. Like, we're going to go over the elements. It was very introductory. And I finished the semester with 100 pages of an unfinished novel. Mm-hmm. So she passed me. And she really encouraged me to keep writing. So I was really lucky to have a teacher who... She is a professional author as well. So she was really encouraging and told me to keep going. So I fell in love with long form storytelling mm-hmm. at that point and just kept at it since then. Mm.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You don't really hear that very often. Mm-hmm. academic, you know, sort of teachers encouraging you to usually it's, is there anything else you can do?
or this is a good backup plan. That's what
Yeah.
Well, what is your definition of success?
So I've tried to have a specific goal for each book or each project that I take on.
That's
and
so smart.
Because the success, I mean, we look at the traditional what society says success is, like so many figures earned, so many sales, but we can do the best job possible. We can have the most technically perfect book. Somehow there's magically no typos. It is perfect by somebody's standard. And it maybe sells a dozen copies because that same day Stephen King released a book. And guess what?
Yeah.
Everybody's focused on him or whoever the big author of the day is. And so I've tried to have a goal for each of my books and each of my launches. And that's how I define success. So I'm really working to that individual goal, which is tough sometimes because there's the shiny things to drop for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the first book that I self-published, I said my goal is to write it and to self-publish it. Right. And then I knew the next book was going to be a collection of stories. And I said, I want this done in 1 year. I want to do a book a year. That's my goal. And then from there, I've challenged myself more with my craft to write from multiple points of view, to write from points of view that I don't live. I do a lot of female characters because I'm female. And so I wanted to challenge myself to write male characters and to write characters from different points of view. So I find that each book kind of naturally presents a challenge. I'm like, okay, success is if I feel at the end of this that
my craft is where I want it to be, or okay, I'm launching this and I have X amount of time for my pre-order. So I want to get so many posts out. I want to try and beat my pre-order sales from the last book. So I try my best to measure it against myself and not others, because that's too much of a mind game to try and measure against others. I don't always succeed. I do have my moments, but I really try to keep it as a personal challenge.
That's so wise.
Those are such good measures of success, because they're all things pretty much that are in your control. Like, you may not have the control on how many pre-orders you get, but you can control how much you do to produce that result. So that's so smart to think about goals that you have the ability to reach yourself, instead of, oh, I want to do certain things that are beyond your control, like a certain rank or advertising results and stuff. Because sometimes that just, you can't do it no matter what happens.
No matter what happens. Like you said, somebody, you know, Stephen King, Brandon Sanderson, or, you know, whoever releases a book that day in your genre, and you just go, because there's nothing that you could have done to prevent that, because you didn't. Well, that's great. Well, what do you wish you'd known about writing and craft when you started?
I think it took me a while to get to the place where I would write something, because I write, you know, science fiction, speculative fiction. It gets dark. It's a little dark. And so there'd be times I'd write something and I'd be like, that's too dark. That's too cringy. I can't have that. And I've recently come into a place in my life where I'm like, I'm on the right track if I'm cringing. Like, okay, you know, I'm really getting into what is the meat of what's happening to this character and what are they going through? And they're not going to have some surface level reaction like, that makes me sad. Yeah. You know, they're going to be like, oh, like, this was a devastating moment. This was a real setback. And so trying to really lean into that to say, if I'm uncomfortable, then it's probably coming from a place creatively where something needs to be expressed, something needs to come out. And so for the kind of books I enjoy reading and the kind of books I enjoy writing, I want to feel that little bit of a push and outside of my comfort zone. And so I'm leaning into that. And that's probably why my husband jokes, he's like, can you become a sellout and just write happy romance stories? Because your stories are really dark. And I was like, I would love to. Let me tell you, I have tried to write happy endings and I can't. Yeah. And that's kind of like a hallmark. You can't write a happy ending, you can't write romance. Yeah. And I say sellout in the most flattering way, because I wish I could do it. I wish I could turn out so many amazing, happy stories and make the world a brighter place. Yeah. Apparently I can't. That is the challenge I need to issue to myself.
Well, if your mother, if you grew up with your mother reading Stephen King, it's kind of in your DNA.
Yeah.
So, but I love that answer. I don't think we've ever had an answer like that. And I really love that, because I think that leaning into what makes, well, like you said, the things that make you kind of uncomfortable, then you're really beginning to mine that gold, but also leaning into the things that make you unique. And I think so many of us want to conform because that's what everybody else seems to be doing, that, you know, we really need to think about that. I love that answer.
Well, what about marketing? What do you wish you'd known about marketing? Insert eye rolls.
Yeah. Wish I could have seen her face. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So the thing is, I knew the things I was supposed to be doing for marketing. So my corporate day job when I started self-publishing was I worked in digital marketing and email marketing for a massive sports brand. And so the self-publishing on the side was my creative outlet, wanted it to be my full-time job. And I knew I was supposed to be on my own email list. I knew the best practices for, you have the lead magnet and you have the catchy, you have the call to action and you only have the one thing. And I knew all the email compliance. I knew all the different systems and how they're pretty much just all the same. They just have a different format. I knew all the things, but because it was my day job, I would get home and think about starting my own email list. And I ignored it. I was like, no, I'm going to build up my social media following. You know, I really want to work on that. And so for too long, I kept putting off building up my own email list because I just was like, that's part of my day job. That's work. You know, this is for fun. But I was saying this is for fun, but expecting business-like results from my writing career. And so it was me being stubborn and not wanting to bring my day job into the fun part of writing and publishing, but realizing like I missed out on years of really building a strong audience and, mm-hmm. and capturing that interest and bringing them along because of this very like pigheaded, like, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So it was something I knew what I was supposed to do and mm-hmm. I knew how to do it and I didn't do it.
Yeah.
So I wish I had almost myself coming back in time to be like, do it. If mm-hmm. you need to do it, like this is your zone of strength, you know, right. all the best practices you're getting through work, you know, newsletters to like these industry things about like email marketing, like do this. And then I left my corporate job and I was like, I really need to build an email list. Yeah. so it's followed me around. So I wish I had been better.
Yeah.
With my dedication to that.
I love what you said about wanting to do this fun thing, but expecting, you know, business like results. And I think that's so true. You know, I think a lot of us get in that headspace of, oh, this is just the fun creative me. It's not, you know, I don't want to bog it down with all this business stuff, but then we want the business results. So yeah, I think that being mindful of that is very wise. So yeah, I love that.
I think there's this
Oh, no, go ahead, please.
Well, I think there's this myth in society that we see in movies or shows or even books of, oh, I loved baking cupcakes and all of a sudden, you know, people wanted to buy my cupcakes and I'm a millionaire from making cupcakes.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, somewhere along the way, you told people about it, you set a price,
yeah.
you had to get packaging, you had to do all these things. So like you had to make business decisions along the way to get to massive figures. And I think right. we buy into this myth of happy accident. Mm-hmm. You know, this is your zone of genius, this is your talent. People, if you build it, they will come. But like mm-hmm. you have to build it and you have to promote it and you have to refine it and you have to make decisions and you have to put yourself out there for people to come.
Yeah.
And I fell into that fallacy for too long. So
yeah. Yeah. And if you hear a big thing of silence, it's because my phone went dark and I couldn't get to the next question. And even though we've been doing this 3 years, I still don't know what the questions are sometimes. So what assumption did you make at the beginning of your writing career and looking back, did they turn out to be right or wrong?
So I kind of assumed, knowing that this book was amazing, that it was going to go viral, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, what am I going to do when I have to just pop up to New York to be on the Today Show to talk about my viral success as an indie? Like, I was
child,
big creative dreams, right? Like, I will put myself out there. Like, it was like, it's embarrassing and cringy for me to think of, like, what was I thinking? You know, and everybody's going to love this book. Like, the first book I published, Nailbiters, is a hard science fiction apocalyptic thriller. So there is a very unique group of people who will love that.
Niche. And, very niche.
Yes. And everybody else is going to hate it. And so I assumed, I'm like, well, no, like they'll love it because it's such a good story. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that, like, no, if somebody who is like a diehard historical romance fan likes my book, I did something wrong because mm-hmm. I'm saying it's a hard sci-fi techno thriller, apocalyptic invasion story. That people who like Regency romances and only like Regency romances should not like this. I've done something very wrong. I've gone down a wrong path. And I needed to learn that it's okay if my book isn't for everybody because I don't like to read everybody. And the people who want to find that other kind of book, awesome. There's so many other authors out there. Go find them. I just want to find the people who want what I write.
Right.
And so that was an interesting assumption that I made. But in some ways, I'm glad I did. Of saying like, what if I get viral success? What if all these things happen? What would I want to be able to do? And so when I started out, I decided to own my ISBNs. There's Amazon offers the free ISBNs. Now Ingram Spark offers free ISBNs. Drafter Digital offers them. And what I kind of went down the rabbit hole looking for was, well, why would I want to own them? Like, why should I buy them? Mm-hmm. Free sounds good. And so kind of understanding, well, if I ever wanted to take my book off of Amazon and put it somewhere else, mm-hmm. or I wanted it to be available in wide distribution, which that wasn't really a term back in 2015, but it's now become like the it term with self-publishing, that I should own them. So I'm glad that I had the crazy wild idea that my book could go viral and I would need to have all these things in place because I owned my ISBNs and I still own them to this day. And so I have been able to make better business decisions with my books that I own for that reason. I haven't been locked to a platform. I haven't been in the sticky situation of now I need to re-release it. as a new addition just to get it off this platform, and what's that going to take? So I'm really glad that I did that. So that assumption worked out. Like, I should own my ISBN. Super happy I did that. No regrets. Going in blind thinking I was going to be the wild unicorn, you know, it was a humbling moment when I was not the unicorn. Weird.
Yeah, we all think we're going to be unicorns.
I was going to say, I think we all have been there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very common. Yeah. Yeah. And as somebody who used the free ISBNs in the beginning and had to go back and buy them, and yeah, it's so much faster and easier to have your own from the beginning. I totally agree. So yeah. Great lesson learned. I learned it the hard way, though.
Yeah.
Well, what's the most important lesson you've learned, do you think?
Patience. I am a perfectionist, but I'm also impatient. And so I think patience has been the biggest lesson I've learned. And I think it's something I reiterate on my YouTube channel all the time. I say, pack your patience. Because I say books move at the speed of books. There's like the speed of light, really fast, the speed of sound. And then there's the very slow speed of books. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I see from newbie authors or even some seasoned authors is like, I don't want to wait. I'm done. I want the book out. Or, okay, it's done. It's up. I'm moving on to the next book. I'm not going to promote it as much as I really wanted to. Or it's just done. I want it out. I'm not going to do a pre-order. Or it's done. Let me just, you know, rush to get to that finish line. And I think the patience, it's so difficult when you've worked on a book for years and you're like, I just want it out. I want it out. I want it out. But it's kind of what separates the authors who can continue to do this versus the ones who kind of burn out, because that patience is going to let you make sure that, oh yeah, that plot hole, I could fix that before we go on to the next round of revisions, or that patience is going to help you come up with a better marketing plan or reach out for promotions for the book, and publicity and things like that. So the patience is constantly having to relearn it myself, but that's the number one thing that I even say to other authors, novice authors and experienced authors, is like, patience. Mm-hmm. It's the number one thing that I've learned through all this that I will reiterate all day, every day.
Yeah, that's a good answer, because it is true. You know, I think one of the saddest things, because I do work with authors too, and one of the saddest things I see is when an author comes to me and they have, you know, a whole series up, but the first two just weren't those great books, that the last two are, because they knew more, they could do more, they, you know, because they just stuck those first two up or something, or the first one, or the whole series or whatever. And then they've got these books they can't really do anything with. And if they had just taken a little time, it would have, made a difference. That's a great, great answer. Well, what's the biggest change you've had to make in your thinking?
So this is one I'm kind of going through right now, is kind of switching from the self-publishing route to traditional publishing. Mm-hmm. So my current novel, that I'm working on my agent with, surprise, I have an agent now. I was working on it and I was going through, you know, those moments of like, okay, who's this audience? How am I going to reach them? Cause each of my books has been slightly different. So I mentioned that first novel and that series was like very like apocalyptic sci-fi. I have more of a lighthearted adventure, Michael Crichton-esque sci-fi series, which it's still sci-fi, but it's different. I have other more like domestic thrillers. So I've written all over the place and therefore I have different verticals. So when I was writing this latest book, which is speculative fiction, I was thinking like, okay, who's this audience? What books would I compare it to? Where would I find these readers? And I kept going back to like, the readers who would like this don't find their book recommendations where it leads them to indie books. Not that they're stuck up and they won't read indie books. They're just not finding them where they are.
Right.
I'm finding them through traditional media recommendations. And if I am going to say this book compares to these other books that were traditionally published, I may need to go out of my comfort zone of self-publishing and try my hand at traditional publishing to give this book the best chance for success. And that was tough for me, but I was reading a parenting book at the time, and it was talking about how you have your different kids and, you know, your one kid, they're going to do just great at the local public school. They're sociable. They have good grades, but you have another kid, they maybe need more personal attention, smaller classroom, or maybe they're really talented, so they need to do the homeschool so then they can go do their hockey team or whatever. And so you kind of pick the different school routes for your children based on what plays to their strengths sometimes, if you can do that. And I was like, I think this child, this book child needs a different route. And it was tough for me because I identify so much as an indie author, wanting to encourage indie authors and support indie authors. And I was like, I think I'm about to try to go traditionally published. And that was a big mindset shift for me of just, well, what's best for this book and the audience that needs to find it versus knowing that my science fiction series that like, okay, well, like for genre fiction, like science fiction, indie authors can do well in that space. But like for this one, I went out there and I signed with an agent, which was exciting. And we're working on the manuscript. So it's been weird because I feel like I know the process, but I don't know the process. So I'm trying to just go in as though I don't know anything on the other side, but it's been interesting. It's been a good learning experience.
That's great. Now, how did you do the whole query thing? Mm-hmm. And oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a whole thing in and of itself.
Yeah, I was going to say books have a slow progress, but like traditional publishing, their progress is like a glacial pace. Mm-hmm. So it's like it just takes forever. It's completely different. So
yes,
that's really interesting that you've switched. And I think it's good to think of it as this book needs this. Mm-hmm. Does this book need this? It's a more mature way of looking at your marketing and your career.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because when I first started writing, so I wrote two novels that will never see the light of day because I acquired them, went out with them, no one would read them. Go figure, they're the first two books I ever wrote. They're not compared to where I am in my writing craft now. I agree with every person who was like, pass. And I, you know, at that mindset when I was so young, it was like, no, like I have to just pay my dues by getting all these no's, right? Mm-hmm. But really what I wasn't learning was like, I need to refine my pitch. I need to, you know, go out and seek out sources to learn how to do this better, how to improve, you know, that first bit that's going to catch attention. And I just thought it was like, no, you get so many no's. And then finally the editor says, okay, you can come in the gate. And it's like, no, like it was supposed to be optimizing and learning. And like, I've learned a lot in the intervening decade. So I think that helped with that process. But yeah, it's even more patience. I'm packing multiple bags and carry-ons.
You're checking some of the carry-on. Yeah.
You've shipped a few. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you were starting over today, what would you do differently or would you not change anything?
I would do things differently. So when I was self-publishing my first book, I kept it really close to the vest and I only told a few people because I was so nervous of what if this doesn't go well? What if I chicken out? What if along the way editorial feedback is, are you sure you don't want to do this?
Yeah.
Maybe not. And so I almost did it as like a surprise. Mm-hmm. I have a book. It's on pre-order. And the thing with surprise announcements is it works for Beyonce and it works for Taylor Swift. But I am neither Beyonce nor Taylor Swift. And so what I've learned is that I need to start talking about my books sooner and teasing them sooner, or at least saying what the topic is. You know, sometimes I get nervous. I'm like, well, if I say it too soon, what if somebody else takes that idea? And like, once I'm like, no, that's not.
I
realize that's not the problem that I need to be worried about. It's more just that nobody knows about it and nobody's prepared for it. I'm not really building the excitement for the book launch. So I would not do surprise drops. I would be promoting.
Have a launch plan. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a perfect example of something that you see somebody doing and you think, oh, I will try this. But then you don't take into account their audience and their, especially if you're a brand new author.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Remember, I thought I was going to go viral.
I was going to say delusions of grandeur.
Yeah. You know.
As we all have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, you write across different genres, as you said. Mm-hmm. So was that an intentional decision or do you just follow the muse and do all of your books have the same sort of darker feel to them, across the genres?
So I was definitely following the muse, the story that inspired me. And I think if I had been starting out from a business point of view, I would have said, okay, I need to write a series, finish a series, write a series, finish a series. Instead I was writing standalones. And then later I was like, oh, I think I want to add another book to the series. Like not best practices, but it was much more following the muse, telling the story I wanted to tell at that time. And I'm glad for that, because I think if I had been pushing myself to like slog through, the quality of writing wouldn't have been as good. It's like, no, I just have to make a series, but I don't feel inspired to write the next books in the series yet. So I'm glad for that, even though it did hinder my success. And yes, all of my books are dark. I did a social media post today. I finished the draft of book number 15 last week. And I was like, it's my darkest book yet. My husband was like, all your books are kind of dark. Like, we need a scale. And I was like, okay, this is like 100% cocoa. And the other ones are somewhere between like 75 to 85% cocoa. Like, they're dark.
The dark chocolate scale. I love it.
On the dark chocolate scale. So now, of course, I'm craving chocolate. So yes, they all kind of have a darker through line, or just, you know, people in interesting and challenging situations. And there's no like, and then they lived happily ever after. It's like, oh, and then they lived with the consequences of what they did. And they got their comeuppance. And yeah.
Yeah. But then if they all have sort of the same tone, I can see how you could write different things and it could appeal to this, the same reader could take an interest in it. Mm-hmm. Do you market them differently?
Yes. Absolutely. And I've noticed as I've started to branch out on different platforms, that there's certain platforms where I will only promote The Infinite, my first in series for my sci-fi adventure, like Michael Crichton-esque style book, and my Interview with a Van Lifer vampire short story. I will only put those on TikTok. Like, they do better on there. They get more interest on there. Whereas when I talk about like my hard sci-fi techno thriller series, it just doesn't land as well. I think the covers are prettier and brighter for the other two. And I think that lends well to TikTok and that like instant scrollability, what's going to catch your eye. Whereas Nailbiters, it has a dark cover because it's a dark book. And so I haven't found the right cubby hole on TikTok for that yet. So I don't promote it there as much. Whereas on Instagram, I'll talk about all my books and my series. And then on my YouTube channel, my nonfiction books sell themselves because I'm answering self-publishing questions, and my books are about self-publishing. So I've made a point to say I'm only going to promote those on YouTube, where it is an organic match of like, you came here for answers about self-publishing and being an author, and hey, here's the rest of what you don't know in this book. So that's, I've differentiated more in the past 2 years, and that's been a huge benefit.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your helping authors. Since you have a YouTube channel and you have books and courses for that, so tell us a little bit about that. And then what are some of the, we've mentioned one, I think you mentioned one common mistake that you see, like being too quick to release and not being patient, but do you have any other common mistakes that you see frequently?
I would say common mistakes for newbie authors is the lure of the free ISBN. I would say 90% of the questions that I get on my channel are, okay, I got the free ISBN, but now I need to do this. Or, well, I'm planning to get the free ISBN, but how do I get my Library of Congress number? Because I need the ISBN. I'm like, you got to own your ISBN. And so lots of things like that. But the YouTube channel really came out of that need of, I put out a few books, just all over my social media saying, hey, I have books, I have books, and getting people asking for my help and wanting to give that personalized response. I felt when I was starting, I'm a bad millennial. I'm just going to put that out there. I really, my spirit is that of an 80-year-old grandmother. And so I should have known, being a millennial, oh, I can go on Facebook and find groups of other young writers in my area and become friends with them. I didn't think about that. Again, I was off in my delusions of grandeur, Phil. I wasn't like thinking practical. And so I didn't feel like I had good resources to find this information. And so when people ask questions, I wanted to, yes, I will take the time to answer you. But it was very time consuming. And even just kind of like pre-writing answers to these common questions, I felt wasn't personal enough. So I did the YouTube channel, and I'm glad I didn't do any research on YouTube first, because I would have found all these other channels and just sent it to other people. And I wouldn't have had this beautiful community that's formed and the idea for these books. I had all these videos and I was like, you know, I get these questions about the ISBNs or these common mistakes. And oh gosh, I wish I could get in front of people sooner. And like, what's another way I could get to people to catch them before they make these mistakes? And I was like, oh, I could write a book. So it was kind of a beautiful mistake, and this beautiful community that's grown up around it. So I really enjoy it. I really focus on talking to like first time authors, maybe even second time authors. There's other really great channels that are for the, I've been doing this for 10 years. Let me try some different experiments. Let me try some new things. I'm really always talking to like, this is the exact button you push at this exact time. And when you get this error message, don't panic. Because that was what I needed when I started. And so the channel really, every video I make is answering a question that I've gotten from another video, or I'm getting a lot of these questions. It's time for me to redo this video. So the YouTube algorithm knows to show it to authors before they make XYZ mistake. So yeah, that's been fun with that. And then the books go out of it. And my courses are more like email courses of, hey, this is your email, you're going to be on my email list, but then I'm going to send you reminders of X, Y, and Z to really help you develop a plan.
Yeah.
Well, having a plan is the one thing.
So you have specific topics for your book. So you've got mm-hmm. one on going wide. Mm-hmm. And what else do you have? I can't remember all the titles. Mm-hmm.
So there's self-publishing for the first-time author that okay. really just goes through, you've written the book, now what? And the decision points of, are you going to own your ISBNs? Like, what is an ISBN? What's the difference between an ISBN and a barcode? I'm kind of going over some of the lingo and getting you up into the point where you are editing and you think you're ready to publish. So that's that first book. The second book is book marketing for the first-time author of, all right, I think the manuscript's done. I kind of saying, well, you really should have started earlier and been promoting it, but let's talk about book covers. Let's talk about pre-orders. Let's talk about what are the different email service providers and social media and things like that. I have how to write your first novel, which really goes through, okay, I have an idea. What are some best practices for scheduling time to get the words down? What are the different narrative styles that you can leverage? Going wide is all about going wide, whether you're starting out from zero books and you know you want wide distribution, or you've been Amazon only and you think, I don't want that anymore. And then I have the Author Your Ambition workbook. I call it my phone book. It's my Mac Daddy checklist of all the things that I do whenever I self-publish in book form. And so it'll say, if you have chosen to do Amazon only for your ebook, go to this page. If you've chosen to do wide distribution for four different formats, go to this page. And so it's truly the checklist. And again, it was a way for me to buy back more time of like, here's my brain. You can just get it right here. And then I can work on my book while you have my brain over here and you can check off all the things. And so that was something that I was happy to go through the process and had some really great beta readers who are members of just like my YouTube community go through and say, okay, this wasn't clear. Or, hey, I know you don't do XYZ genre, but this is something that's big in the genre. Maybe just start to like talk about that. And I was like, oh, that's really helpful. So really great feedback that was crowdsourced from the community as well.
That's fantastic. Very thorough.
I'm into the project management and the task lists. So that was a fun project for me. It very much appealed to that side of my brain.
Yeah. I love that. And we'll have the links for all those things in the show notes, because I just feel like that's completely invaluable. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. 100% invaluable. I would have loved to have that in the beginning of my career. That would have been awesome. I listened to podcasts and found those things out, but it would have been nice to have them all in one place. It was great. So you also have a PayHip store for signed books and book plates. Anything else?
Yeah. So I sell all of the digital versions of my books. So I have all my ebooks and audiobooks are for sale my PayHip store. And then for any of the print books, I'll autograph it. And then I started to offer the book plates knowing people maybe purchased it and then wanted it signed. Those haven't been a big seller, but I have them available just in case.
Yeah, sure.
But the direct sales have been great. I think I posted something at the beginning of February. It was like a week into the month. And I was like, all my sales so far have been direct, and I'm not unhappy about it, because like I'd rather it be direct sales, and these were physical books, these were ebooks, and that was really exciting. And then I got from all the retailers, and maybe it was just a delayed report, but I was like, oh, this is awesome. I would much rather have more direct sales and be able to have a direct communication with my customers, and Amazon rankings are great, but they're fickle anyways. So I think there was a phrase that I got from Aaron Wright's group, Wide for the Win. It was like bank over rank, like I love the direct sales. So it's really nice. And I'll still, my daughter is three. And so now whenever I get the print sales coming in, you know, I throw it in the envelope and I go out into the store to get my media mail discount and she'll like hold it and like, you're helping mommy with her business. So it's nice to kind of have her see that action of like, this is what it's like to own a business. And, so yeah, I love people who purchase direct for me because they're supporting my dreams and hopefully my daughter will have dreams of her own one day. She'll be able to help with it.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, do you keep, so you keep stock, right? If you're signing things, right? So you're doing the digital through PayHip. But then do you also do the print books through PayHip as well?
Mm-hmm. So it's all one store. And so however they want to order it, I keep low stock. I kind of know which books sell quicker than the others. And so I kind of know, okay, like this one's going to last longer. Whereas this one, I need to restock. Every once in a while, I'll just be like, you know what? I'm done with selling the direct books. I just want to sell it all. I want the shelf space back. And then other times I'm like, no, I need more stock. And so it depends on the attitude you catch me in, but for most times I really enjoy it and it's always exciting when I get that direct sale. So I'm like, fill your order right now.
And so you went with PayHip and not Shopify. Is there a reason?
So when I was starting to do the direct sales, I wasn't sure what the interest was going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, up until then, all my sales were through retailers.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know what that was going to be. And so Shopify has a minimum fee just to even set up the store. And I thought I would have to sell a lot of digital products to kind of cover that and just not knowing what it was going to be. And I don't feel at this point, I have so many things set up on PayHip. I'm like, I don't want to migrate to Shopify. So that's why I've stuck with it. And then it's like the thought of going back, because I have links for my store on all my YouTube videos. I have to go back through all my videos and change all the links. And like,
it'd be a big job. And if it's doing fine, then why would you move?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If it ain't broke. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So I'm really grateful for that. And then they have more things that I could expand into if I wanted to through their platform, which is nice that they've grown. So
that's great. It's nice to hear from people doing different things. There's a lot of talk about Shopify. So good to hear that. Absolutely. Good to hear about PayHip working really well.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go back just real quickly and talk about your community. Because you said, so it's basically grown up around your YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So do you interact with them through comments or do you have like something off YouTube? How do you communicate with them?
So a lot of it has been just through the comments. So I can see it actually shows icons for like this person comments the most on your posts or this person likes all these comments the most. And so YouTube has a feature to have memberships. Mm-hmm. And so last year I launched that and it's a small membership, but it's like, you know, they pay a small fee every month. They get extra access to me. I was doing bonus videos for them. And then we did live calls. And I had to scale back the live calls. I was telling you guys before the show, my daughter is officially on a nap strike. And I kind of tell it was coming. And I was like, I don't think it's fair to my members to say like, hey, we're going to do this call. But then like, I might have to run off. And I was like, that's not a good value to you guys. So we've continued to have it going with accountability posts and accountability check-ins. So it's really great because I get to connect with them. They get to connect with me, but I love it when they just like connect with each other and figure out things offline and decide to do like workshops together. And I'm just like, yay. I love it. So
that's a sign of a really healthy community. I think that they're not just there for you, but they're making friendships with each other, which is fantastic.
So I really appreciate that. And I always have this little thing in the back of my mind, like I should really set this up off of YouTube and I should set something up that's not on a platform I don't own. But then I'm like, I don't want to rock the boat. It's going so well. Like I'm a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors and I see all the work they're doing right now to move people from their Facebook member portal to a private member portal. And I'm just like, granted, they have a huge membership compared to my small little YouTube one. But I was just like, that seems like a lot of work I don't want to do right now when I want to be writing my next book. So I'm just going to leave it where it is. And one day, maybe I'll do what they're doing. But
You have to weigh those things against writing your books because that's, you know, that's I mean, you can do, trust me, I know all the marketing in the world. But if you're not putting out books, then that marketing doesn't really help you at some point. Well, very good. Well, we love to ask this question to people. What do you think the best thing you've done is to set yourself up for success has been?
I think being that little bit delusional. Because I think it's important because when I ask myself, like, okay, best case scenario, what would really help this book sell? What would go out of the way? And so when I launched Interview with a Van Lifer, which is my cute little hippie vampire novella, because they're vampires and they're van lifers. Van life vampires. I reached out to three really big van life YouTube accounts. And I said, I was actually inspired by some of your videos and kind of my husband and I are very pale. He's actually had skin cancer before. So like we stay away from the sun and we were watching this series of van life videos in Mexico. And I was like, oh, it looks amazing. Our toddler's asleep in the other room. I'm like, we can't go live in a van in Mexico, but it looks amazing. He's like, we'd be vampire life because we would only go out at night. And I was like, oh, vampires.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. So that was kind of spurred the idea. And so I finished the book. The novella, and I reach out to these accounts, and one of them wrote back the same day, and they're like, "That sounds so fun! Please send us a copy. Be happy to help promote it." And so, being a little bit delusional and being a little bit brave because you're delusional sometimes pays off. By getting somebody to help promote it, and or just say, "That's really cool. It's really interesting." Because you never know where that could lead. You never know where that conversation could go. So yes, sometimes it's okay to be a little delusional and to plan for what if. It does go really well.
Right.
Don't put all your marbles in that basket either. You still have to do all the work
behind it. You still have to set up a newsletter and do all that boring stuff. Yeah.
You know, that was a good lesson too.
Well, this has been just awesome and lots of fun to talk to you.
Yeah.
And you've had so much great information. So tell people where they can find out more about you and your books.
And your YouTube channel. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So you can find me everywhere online as the number one MK Williams. Mm-hmm. I used to say it's because I'm the one MK Williams, but there is another MK Williams. He's a man living in the UK. Mm-hmm. So you'll know it's me because I have long flowing brown hair and I very much present as female. So you'll know if you found me, but you can find me onemkwilliams.com where all my books live. On YouTube, you can look for Author Your Ambition or just MK Williams and my videos will pop up. So yeah, you can find me anywhere online as MK Williams.
That's great. Awesome. Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This is a really fun conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been great. And we'll have all those links in the show notes and they will be at wishidknownforwriters.com. And if you want to support the podcast, you can go to that same link /support. Thanks to Alexa Larberg for doing the editing and producing the podcast and to Adriel Wiggins for doing the admin. See everybody next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.